Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
We'll call the Transportation House Transportation meeting to order. Greeting the internet listeners and welcome to all of you in the audience. We appreciate you being here. Reminder to turn your cell phones off, of course, during, I think that's actually for myself too. I think mine's still on. Better probably do that myself. And then we will have a couple different arrangements today in the calendar since some people from out of town couldn't be here. But first we'll let the secretary call the roll.
Representatives Elliott. Here. Ironclad.
Here.
Kopp.
Here.
Elang.
Here.
McLaughlin.
Here.
Nordstrup.
Here.
Russell.
Here.
Shrimp.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Street.
Here.
Vercio.
Here.
Junkie.
Here.
And Krebs.
Here.
Quorum is present. Approval of minutes. I'm sure all of you read the minutes.
So moved.
Represented by, or motion by Representative Junkie to approve minutes, seconded by Representative Street. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion's approved for approval minutes. All right, on the calendar we have House Bill 1140, I believe is first. There we go. House Bill 1121 is first, and then 1133 and House Bill 1140. House Bill 1121, establishing certain procedural requirements related to the relocation of electrical lines, communications and communication lines, and pipelines. I have had a request from Representative Steele, the primary sponsor of that bill, to defer that bill till next Thursday, February 5th, due to folks representing those areas wanting to come testify could not make it today. So we will defer House Bill 1121 to next Thursday, February 5th. Next on the agenda is House Bill 1133 to authorize certain specialty license plates to be placed on motorcycles. And I believe our Representative Putnam, where's your black leather? Come on, sit down.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My black leathers, as all some of them, are hanging in the closet getting ready for a little warmer weather. Thank you for taking the time to hear our bill this morning. I'm here as the prime sponsor for the House Bill 1133. Many of you know me. My name really is J.E. Jim Putnam. I'm a state representative from Armour, District 19. My biker friends and a lot of friends across the state as well as the nation know me as Putter because I've been an advocate for the motorcycles industry as well as the motorcycle riders as long as I can remember. So we're here to ask for, if you will, an issue that we think is a fairness issue. It's relatively simple, and I have some folks in our audience, one of them is from out of town, that will have an opportunity to address the bills directly to you and answer any questions. In the meantime, I would stand by for any questions also, Madam Chair, if it's your wish, and we'll just hear from those folks and they'll explain it in detail.
Thank you, Representative Putter, or Putnam, excuse me. We're so used to calling you. Further proponent testimony to House Bill 1133.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Diana Miller, and I'm the registered lobbyist for ABATE. And for those new members, ABATE is a Brotherhood of Awareness, Training, and Education. So everyone always wonders what that, but those are the people that support motorcycle riding and or safety and or education across this state in addition to those that are riders. So we have a very diverse organization. We bring forth this bill. I think over the long run, we've had this goal as a goal of the ABATE organization to move toward this direction for the last 2 or 3 years. And the organizational plates or the specialty plates basically are the plates that some of you are aware of that we authorized a few years ago for, like the universities, to have and put their decals on them. That's simply what we're asking you to do on line 8. It is an organizational decal, and we will have a handout showing you the decal. We are leaving that in the trusty hands of the department to decide the size, to decide the numbering. We want no authority to do any of that. And then we will also make this a revenue neutral bill. Whatever it costs to do it, we will pay the cost so that there is no fiscal impact or you will not lose money on this. Those members that wish to have an organizational plate will be more than willing to pay for that plate. And at current time, I believe you'll hear from people that we have estimated that it will be a $10 fee to put this decal on your plate. And consequently, we would ask for your support of House Bill 1133. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Transportation Committee, and I stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Diana. Further proponents to House Bill 1133. Further proponents to House Bill 1133.
Larry Nielsen, testifying for myself. With the Chair's permission, I have a handout that we would dispense that shows our proposed decal for our particular organization. As you're aware, a motorcycle license plate is smaller than a automobile license plate, so Ms. Hilmer will have to come up with a different design, and in discussion with her, this is an example of what we feel it would possibly look like. The one on my right is an automotive sized one, and the one on the left would be the motorcycle sized one, same decal. Other organizations that I'm aware of course, Abate is interested in this. Patriot Guard Riders have expressed personal interest to me that they would like this, and we've had discussions with groups like the Shriners. Now, we do point out that if you already have a vanity plate, a personalized plate on your vehicle, you can't have both, and we're aware of that. So with that, I guess I would also stand by for any questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Larry. Further proponents to House Bill 1133. Further proponents to House Bill 1133. This time I'll close proponent testimony, and seeing none, then we'll move on to opponent testimony. Any opponents to House Bill 1133? One more call. House Bill 1133, opponents. Opponent testimony for House Bill 1133. Seeing none, I'll close the public testimony, and I'll open up to committee questions at this time for House Bill 1133. Any committee questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Cobb.
Could we make this a $15 fee? I'm just being facetious. I just thought I'd throw that out in light of the fact of the shortness that we have in our own budget. You can disregard.
Representative Cox, you can make an amendment at any time if you would like to amend House Bill 1133 on page 2, line 1. That would give you the opportunity, and then we could have a due process of a motion, and if you want to do that, that's up to you. Okay. Further committee questions? Yes, Representative McLaughlin.
Thank you. I realize the main focus of this is the plate, but you indicated that you're an education organization as well and doing something along those lines. Could you tell us a little bit more as to in what way and how you address that aspect of it for Diana?
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Diana.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative McLaughlin. I'd be happy to do that. We have a motorcycle safety training education program. For those of you experienced legislators that have been here for a few years, realize that about 4 years ago, we brought in a bill putting a $5 additional fee on ourselves, on our license plate cost, in order to fund the motorcycle rider safety training and to use those dollars for replacement of equipment and for scholarships for people to go to this training to educate people, because we found that, and I'm going to be very delicate about this, as our population ages, we have more experienced riders, which I would consider myself an experienced, not old, experienced. And consequently, they have two levels of training they can take. They can take a beginner's course in motorcycle safety and driving, and that's done by the department with certified instructors, and the instructors are many of the riders, Abate members out there, and it's done across the state in various locations, and that fund or that additional fee pays for that course. Then they have an advanced training, and we have, so you can go through a couple sets of training. And in some cases, you might have been a rider when you were young, and then when you became experienced, you need a little refresher course in how to drive. with the number of motorcycle riders increasing, we do a lot of education as far as at risk and what you're on the roads and what to watch out for. We also have a map during the rally that we have a grant that we fund a map of the difficulty of the roads in the Black Hills and for out-of-state riders to come in and see the various roads and throughout the Black Hills are rated so they have an idea of what they're traveling on. And we do, you know, throughout the various communities in the state, there's also a number of programs where they raise money for charity groups. They do poker runs and they do fundraisers, swap meets and that, and then they donate their money to various charities so that we can educate people about safe motorcycle riding. And we have a booth out at the Sturgis Rally that we fund and register. We do a lot of surveys, answer questions from out of state, give advice. So we do a number of things in the education arena that are that's directly related to safety and or riding and or motorcycle, the motorcycle area. So that's what we do in that area. But thank you for the question.
Thank you, Diana. Okay, go ahead, Representative Junkie. Want to have Diana Miller stay seated?
Well, thank you, and the chair might rule this not pertaining to the legislation. Diana, our Representative Putman, this is my first experience on transportation. Is there any implications financially with our helmet optional law from the Fed, you know, with funding from the feds? Is there any, are we receiving any less money? Or do you, if the chair might rule that out of order, which you might prefer.
I don't know if Diana Miller can help us on that one.
Madam Chair, I'm going to throw that over to Representative Putnam, who chairs an Appropriations Committee and is a rider, and certainly I'm sure would love to answer that question for Representative Putnam, our Junkie.
I will actually allow this question just for the fact that a lot of us are new members, and we do have a lot of those questions, and I think it's appropriate to be able to have those questions on this table.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Junkie. And thank you, Diana, for
passing
the hot potato.
Turn your mic on there, Representative Putner.
Thank you. Am I on?
There we go.
Thank you. In the past, you may have remembered that the federal government at one time has come out with some suggestions, seatbelt suggestions, helmet suggestions, the age of the drinking suggestions. A lot of things where states' rights used to have the opportunity to have their say, the feds took a look at it and suggested that it be a statewide or nationwide program, and one of them was seat belts and helmets. In our lobbying efforts with motorcyclists throughout the nation, our lobbying efforts up in that Congress had an opportunity to speak to us being mandated as having helmets. And at that time, we were not put on the table, and we were not put under any situation in which, if we didn't do it, there would be a withdrawal of funds. So what we have tried to do is say, if there is a stick approach, we suggested that we not go that route. If there's a carrot approach in some ways or another, and they can certainly prove their case, and let's do it. But no, we don't see it on the appropriation side in this state of any lack or loss of those monies based on our ability to go up with a grassroots program to suggest that not be the case.
Thank you for enlightening us, Representative Putnam. Any further questions of the committee? Representative Steele.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it doesn't matter who answers. I was going to ask Diana this. I know she'd be able to answer it because of experience has nothing to do with age. I know Representative Putnam would be able to answer it, and it probably would have to do with age there. But. Anyway,
out of order.
Sorry about that, Madam Chair. They have the two sizes here. Does that mean on this one, then, this is used and you do replace your car plates with the big one, or is there two size plates on a cycle? I'm not sure.
No.
Madam Chair.
Or just optional.
Diana, Madam Chair, thank you for the question, Representative Steele. That, the two sizes would be, one is the one on the far right is, or far left, your is for car plates, that you would put that on decal on your regular car plates. The other one's for motorcycles, and we have to determine the size, what works best, because the motorcycle plate is so much smaller. However, if you have what we call a personalized plate, you know, like your name or something like that, or some saying, which is always approved in by Deb Hilmer, I'm sure, in appropriate manner. You must turn in that special, that personalized plate and get a numbered plate. These are for the numbered plates. I would also add, and it probably isn't applicable here, but that decal, the larger one, we're looking at replicating in embroidery for coats and with reflective things on them. So when you're wearing a leather coat, you will have a large Abate sign that's reflective and also a safety issue on the road. But you will, it'll be a decal for the car, Representative Steele.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Steele? Any further questions of the committee? Representative Verschio.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have a question on the decal, and anybody can answer this. What's the oversight of design? And I understand it goes to the organization to sell. All they're purchasing from the state, as I understand, is the plate.
We'll ask and call upon Deb Hilmer of Division of Motor Vehicles.
Fantastic.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Deb Hilmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. The organization has to submit their decal to our office, and we have to approve it. Now, the decal can either be made by a vendor of their choice, or we can have it made at the prison. And if we have it made at the prison industries, then they pay the costs for the making of those decals. But we do have oversight and approval over all decals that are to be put on those license plates. And this will just be in addition to our current organizational plates that are out there. So,
thank you, Deb.
Could I have one follow-up?
Absolutely, Representative Verschio.
Thank you. What control is there once you have this plate of, say, I'm a Hell's Angel from California and I have a sticker? Can I license my vehicle and put a Hell's Angel sticker on there without anybody knowing about it?
Deb.
Madam Chair, that's a good question, Representative. You could. But law enforcement could also stop you because it is a Class 2 misdemeanor to apply a decal that is not approved by the department. So.
Any further questions, Representative Verschio? Any other further questions of the committee for House Bill 1133? At this time, I'll close committee questions and move to and for committee discussion and or action on House Bill 1133.
Move to pass.
There's a do pass motion by Representative Street, seconded by Representative McLaughlin on House Bill 1133. I'll restate the motion. There's a do pass motion on House Bill 1133 with the seconded by Representative McLaughlin. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. All those opposed will state nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Elliott.
Aye.
Ironclad.
Aye.
Cobb.
Aye.
Lang.
Aye.
McLaughlin.
Aye.
Nordstrup.
Aye.
Russell. Shrimp.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Verschio.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
13-0.
House Bill 1133 passes. A due pass motion of 13-0. Any further comments or discussion of the committee?
Move consent.
Representative Street has moved consent.
Second.
Seconded by Representative Lang. Any further discussion on that motion? All those in favor of consent will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 1133 has been posted on consent. All right, we have House Bill 1140 next on the agenda. Make an appropriation from the Railroad Trust Fund for the construction of a railroad siding. The chair is asking to defer House Bill 1140 to Thursday, February 5th. Same reason, members that would like to testify was not able to come today, were not able to make it, so we're allowing them to be here on the 5th is when they would be available. Thursday, February 5th. I will just clarify, is there anybody from out of town currently to testify on House Bill 1140? It's too late. At this time, then, we will defer House Bill 1140 to Thursday, February 5th at that time. We'll have a lot of railroad talk on Thursday, then the 5th. We'll have an agenda hopefully by tomorrow afternoon to let you know what we'll take up on Tuesday. I am, as a chair, trying to wait to see what happens as far as other bills coming in, but we're waiting to see if there's any other fee increases and try to package the fee increase bills together. That way we can take them up at one time. I do know there are a couple Senate bills that have come across. We may take action on Senate bills, but I do like to try to get through all the House bills just for crossover day. We'll try to make action on them. We don't have a lot on the agenda this year. Quieter year than normal. Might be somewhat of a reflection of the budget, but that's also good that we can at least, you know, if there's any questions of the committee, I know a few of you had a couple of questions of the throughout this past couple weeks. Is there any questions that you'd like to ask? We've got a couple minutes. We're moving right along. Deb Hilmer is here from the Division of Motor Vehicles, and I know that Representative Vercio had a question sometimes about the snowmobile fees. Do you have anything that you'd like to clarify? I know. I figure we got some time, and since there's so many new members, we may take this opportunity to ask any questions of Deb. Did you want
to
ask that?
I'd love to, yes.
Let's go ahead and open up the floor here just to give some opportunity for some question and answer with Deb's here. We got some time.
So, Madam Chair, do we call this the hot seat?
Yes, this is the hot seat.
This is the hot seat. And I am a huge fan of user fees, by the way. So, and I would like to make those user fees as reasonable as possible. However, also try and pass on the true costs or more of a fair share to someone who uses, in my particular instance, the Black Hills National Forest constantly and doesn't pay the price that the hunting sportsman pays. So I would think that there could be an opportunity to increase and also institute some fees there. Is there anything that we're working on now for ATVs, snowmobiles, anything at all?
Madam Chair, if I may, or Vice Chair.
Yeah.
Representative, right now I have not seen any bills that have been in for snow, in particular snowmobiles. As you maybe know or maybe you don't know, 2 years ago we had a summer study that looked at OHV use in the hills and tried to come up with some licensing or registration process for those. That committee submitted a report, and there is a report, I believe, out on Game Fish and Parks' website that talks a little bit about that. I think the biggest issue is the use of the ATVs on our streets and highways, and then how do you regulate that entire process and still keep your highways safe. And I would say safety is probably the main issue that we're dealing with in that particular area. There are a number of ATVs that are licensed now. In fact, if you just give me a second here, I can probably give you a good idea. The ATVs that were registered this last year were 15,000. And you compare that to our motorcycle population of 38,000. So you've got about a 50%, a little less than 50% of the vehicles that are licensed for use on the roads and highways as ATVs. I do think, you know, that you have the opportunity, if you want to raise the fees on snowmobiles, to do that within the confines of the law. So.
Representative Vercio, any further questions?
Just one follow-up on ATVs. It's more of an urban-rural issue, I understand, than a total everybody's on board with it. But most of the users, as long as there's some ag exemptions, would much rather see us not license the vehicles for the road, but have a user fee for the state parks and for the national forests, et cetera, because they are those of us who ride a lot readily admit they're extremely dangerous on any kind of a road. So perhaps I will look into that. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead. Do
perhaps you would like to serve on a committee.
I'd be happy to.
Just a comment from the chair. That has been studied, like Deb has indicated, And I think that next year we may look at some statute changes in defining more thoroughly OHVs, UTVs, ATVs. And that's something we're going to look at next year, just for the fact that I've been in discussion with Deb Hilmer on that. We do need to address it. And you are correct, Representative Verschio. It is an urban versus rural issue, but ag exemptions would be always on the table, and we definitely have them in the language. But we do need to address the ones that are going down 41st Street at about 60 miles an hour with no helmets and a safety issue. So that will be a discussion, I believe, for next year. Did you get your question answered, though, Representative Verschio, on the user fees from snowmobiles? Okay. And then Representative Ironcloud, and then I know Representative Kopp has one too.
Yeah, I'd like to say good morning to the listeners and the committee and the guests here. Since we're doing the educational information here, I just wanted to ask if you had any information that you think would be useful to us that's at the top of your head. I mean, example, how many license plates cars do you license in South Dakota and revenue? I mean, just those are just some questions. I mean, if you have any.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Yes, Deb.
Representative Ironcloud, at the very first of the session, we did a presentation, and I handed out a pamphlet that really gives you what we collect in license fees and excise taxes and fuel taxes. But we license about 1.2 million vehicles a year. Now, that includes the vehicles, the trailers, the boats, you know, all types of units that we're responsible for. We collect, I better not state it. I'd have to pull it from memory right now, and I'm not sure that I want to do that. So for revenue for the counties and the state. So I do have any information that I have. You're more than welcome to get that information.
Deb, the number is about $60 million for motor vehicle license fees, again, collected by state and county, divided up $47 million going to the county, and to the state about $12 million. But we do have that handout, Representative Ironcloud, if you need that. There's a ton of information in that if we didn't find that.
Madam Chair, can I have a follow-up comment?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I thank you for that information, and the reason why I ask is not only for myself, but it's also for our listeners. For example, when you did give that information in the past, that was for us in a hard copy. But I know some of the listeners out there maybe weren't aware or wasn't listening that day. And so this just gives them opportunity to hear, because I know you're informing us, but we all represent people. And it's good to hear this information coming from straight from the department. It's better explained from you than, you know, sometimes from anybody else, but I just like to make that comment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Ironcloud. I have a couple questions also. Any more for Deb Hilmer? Representative Navstrup, I know Representative Kopp has one for Secretary Burquist, and Representative Shrimp has one for... Okay, probably for Darren. Representative Navstrup.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, I haven't heard anything personally about how the follow the person license plate program has been going, and I guess that's a good thing that I haven't heard anything lately, but I just wanted to ask how the counties were doing and how the state was implementing that program for them.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the question. It's a subject, as you can well imagine, near and dear to my heart.
Clarify.
If I have a choice, I never want to do another year like this last one, not either personally or professionally. You know, when we first implemented, which, as you well know, we had some issues with the system. I'm happy to report today that when you look back in hindsight, they were not as severe as perhaps they were made out to be. We have made a tremendous amount of enhancements to the system and corrected the things that needed to be corrected. And I think other than we still have some issues with speed and the accessibility at the county levels, and we're working with individual counties to determine if it's at their local site or if it is the connectivity to our database. And so we've been working with them. But overall, I have to say that it's went very well. I think the public has accepted it well. I mean, I haven't had any complaints about, you know, this is a stupid program or why did you change type thing. Most of the issues that we've dealt with really were just the internal issues of working with the county treasurers, who by law are our agents for the division in the licensing aspects of that. I think the counties did an excellent job. I know it was stressful for them, but whenever you change not only a computer system, but a complete business process that we had been used to for 70-some years, and now we're changing to a new process, there is a learning curve, and I think we all went through that, including myself. You know, I've been there 30 years with the division, and we had to take some leaps of faith of making business rules and decisions based on what we thought was fair and equitable. And I think overall it's been very good. We're still doing education. I will tell you that we're in the process right now of putting our dealers online. We have about 110 of them online, and since September through the first part of January, they had done over 8,500 titles for us. So everything that we're doing is going to enhance or reduce. It's going to enhance the data, and it's going to reduce the workload at the county. And the way that we're doing that is the dealer puts the information online. When the customer then goes into the county, the county treasurer pulls up the information, collects the tax, and licenses the vehicle. And we have streamlined that process drastically so that dealers, when they put the information in, and it's not that they can't make mistakes, but we have put edits into the system, so hopefully that when the data gets to the county that it's correct, and they don't have to spend a lot of time encoding or entering that data into the system. The other aspect that we're doing, and we hope to release it here within the next 30 days, is our internet renewal system. And so as a consumer, when you get your renewal notice, and we are sending out renewal notices now, when you get your renewal notice, you can actually go online to our website, which is sdcars.org, and you will be able to register your vehicles online. There will be a convenience fee, a dollar per vehicle, but you'll be able to register online with us. And then we'll mail your tags out directly from the division or from the state to you. And you have to do that like 10 days before the end of the month so that we have a time frame by which to get them mailed out. But we think in some areas that will be very well utilized. In some areas it won't be. People go to the courthouses for many reasons. Some of them are social at times, so they may go to the treasurer's office for something other than just for the registration process. But it's our hope that these will be the benefits and find the efficiencies that we're truly looking for. And if we can find those efficiencies, I see some good things down the road for us.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Darren Berquist.
Come on down.
Here, I thought I had found a nice quiet place to sit in the back and read the paper this morning.
We picked you out. The question that I have relates to the amount of money that the Department of Transportation pays GFMP to maintain dirt roads and off highway roads and things like that. And I guess the question that I have is that amount, I believe you said you reduced to $500,000. Why don't they maintain their own roads?
Madam Chair, first of all, I think I might need to clarify a little bit that the money that we provide to Game Fish and Parks for their roads is not, I wouldn't say it's for dirt roads and off-highway roads. It's for the roads within their state park system, which many of those are actually hard surface roads. I guess the question in terms of how they do pay for their roads is one that would be better asked to Game Fish and Parks and myself, because I quite frankly don't know how they fund their roads, other than the assistance that we provide them, which makes up really a just a percentage of their overall road worth. I'm sorry. I'm probably not the right person to answer that one.
No, that's all right. I was under the impression that they were primarily dirt roads and off-trail roads, but you clarified the question for me, so thank you.
And many are hard surface roads that you see within the park system.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yep.
If you may allow, Darren, I think a comment from the chair here, it does, we do out of the state gas tax revenues have a diversion of park roads about $2.7 million, but like you said, it's within the park system themselves, and it probably becomes an efficiency matter just for the fact that you have the equipment available to do that versus having the parks having their own equipment to lay the asphalt and such. Is that correct?
It's not. Okay. We're not doing any of that work. We are providing financial assistance to Game Fish and Parks, who then contracts for most of that.
Thank you for clarifying. So they do contract that.
When we're talking about the assistance that we provide to Game Fish and Parks, and the historically $2 million plus and reduced to $500,000, is not us providing any of that in terms of its work. It's just purely financial assistance to help them contract for the work that they need to do.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying that. So, like you just said, Darren just stated we reduced that down to about $500,000, and I think it's a recognizable comment that you made. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
Let's go with Representative Elliott first and then Representative Street.
Madam Chair, thank you. I have a question about, I'm a new legislator, I have a question about weight of trucks and also the length of trucks, and I believe some of those things that they have at the back are called pups, is that right? Could you talk a little bit about the maximum weight and the maximum length? And I believe this was changed some time ago as far as the length. Was that changed in the law? Could you speak to that, please?
Madam Chair, I'm sensing a trend developing this morning because I'm also not the person to speak on that. Motor carrier, which is part of Highway Patrol, is the agency that does the overweights and the overlength and enforcement. We don't do that within Department of Transportation. So I'm familiar with the term pup, and that's about as far as I could go with that. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Representative Elliott, I may try to enlighten you a little bit. It's a 48-foot by like a 102 for like a refrigerated van or a trailer, and the pups would be, I believe, another, I'm not for sure, but they do have some extra weight limits for those pups, so the average weight of an 80,000-pound tractor-trailer unit would be an extra, I think, 12,000 pounds for 92,000 pounds for those pups or extra axles, but they have to have special permits for that if you're over length and overweight. You do have to pay as a permit. Am I correct, Deb? And then the second part to that is that agricultural, there's an agricultural exemption for those hauling in the fall, the farm-to-market operation, and they have a 10% overweight allowance. So some farmer may bring his crop to the grain elevator and be overweight by over the 80,000-pound limit by about 10%, and they wouldn't be fined on that.
Madam Chair. How does that compare to other states around us? Do you know that?
We're pretty consistent with everybody else as far as this weight and length limit. Am I correct, Deb? You may know for permitting purposes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I think we're pretty consistent. However, the thing that South Dakota does different than other states, like other states will limit them to 82,000 pounds or 80,000 pounds. We don't have a limitation. The limitation is based on the bridge formula. If they can have the number of axles to carry the weight that they're hauling, then we have no cap per se on what weight you can haul. And that is probably true of the majority of, I would say, the western states follow that. We're probably the last one before you start going east that they have real restrictions on the weights and size of those units. So we probably follow more the western half of the United States because of our ruralness and our ability to pull those larger, longer loads. So. Did I answer your question, Representative?
Follow-up question.
Absolutely, Representative Elliott.
Have there been any I don't know if you know this, but have there been any accidents with this extended length because of the extended length that we allow?
Madam Chairman, Representative Ellie, I don't know that for sure, but I can definitely get Captain Pat Fahey of the Motor Carrier Enforcement and let him know that you have some questions on that and come see you, if that would work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. I think that'd be a great idea, Representative Elliott, and then we could maybe have him share that with the rest of the committee as well. And I believe Representative Shrimp, but I know you have one, so Representative Shrimp.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd like your secretary to come forward. I've got a question to ask him, please. Might be a real simple question, but we'll find out.
I haven't sufficiently demonstrated my ignorance enough yet this morning, then.
The question I got is, we're in the midst of making some power lines up there, and what do we, is, can a man go down the edge of the highway as a right-of-way, or what's the law on that? I've heard questions from developers saying they can and you can't, and also to cross, this is Highway 212, and to tie on the, to go across the bridge at the Wahee down there at Gettysburg, is it possible to tie on to that?
Madam Chair, it is, there is a provision in law that allows a utility to make application to not just the state but whoever may have jurisdiction or responsibility for a particular road for permission to locate a utility line within the right-of-way of the highway. The caveat on that is that when a utility does locate within the right-of-way or on a bridge, and at some point due to construction needs needs to be relocated, they do so at their own expense. So we have quite a wide variety of utilities within our state highways across the state. So that is an option.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Street.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Darren, is there what's the likelihood of some restoration of that those funds for the state park roads? You know, we have a project at Hartford Beach State Park that was described as being in limbo because of the road money. And just curious, are there prospects for some restoration of those funds?
Not unless there are some additional state highway funds that suddenly become available. I was just trying to figure out how to word that, but.
Thank you. You've given me some cover.
All right.
Representative Ironcloud, I believe. Anybody else?
Yeah, good morning, Secretary. Can you speak to the relationship between the Department of Transportation and tribal Native tribes in regards to roads? And if so, is there any dialogue going on? Because all roads are continuous, and, I mean, in regards to safety and areas of law?
Sure. I'll try to address that, Madam Chair, if I might. From an overall perspective, and at least certainly from my and the department's view, we have come a long ways in recent years in our relationships with the various tribes in South Dakota when it comes to highway issues. We have an individual within the department by the name of June Hansen, who is really our, one of her primary job duties has been to be the liaison for us, so to speak, between the department and tribal government. And she has done an outstanding job at that. And just, you know, I've been in the department for 10 plus years now, and I've seen over that time period that our relationship has gotten so much better than it even was when I first got there. Are there still issues? Yeah, absolutely, and there probably always will be, but we've really been able to work through a lot of those issues. We one of the things that has helped in that regard is we annually have a day-long planning meeting with each individual tribe. We're in the process of scheduling those for this year right now, where we sit down and talk about a whole host of things related to highways in terms of planning and environmental issues and archaeological issues and safety issues and all those types of things. So from my perspective, I believe we probably have as good a relationship with the tribes in terms of highways than we've had in quite some time.
Yeah, can I have a follow-up?
Yes.
Chairwoman, thank you. Could you talk real briefly about some of the strengths that you believe you see and some of the challenges that you're faced with in regards to the relationship with tribes?
Madam Chair.
Hey, Darren.
I guess the what I would identify as and I guess the easiest way to answer that is I'll identify the biggest strength and the biggest struggle that I think we have. Our biggest strength, in my opinion, is the increased level of communication and partnering that is going on now as opposed to what may have gone on historically. We're much better able to, when issues, tribal issues related to highways occur, to sit down with the appropriate people from the tribes and work through those issues, which wasn't necessarily always the case before, is my understanding. One of the things that we struggle sometimes with in terms of highways on within the reservations, which can have a detrimental impact on what we can do with those roads, is the lack of sufficient accident and safety data that we need to support using some of those specialized safety funds to make improvements. We're somewhat tied in how we can use those safety funds, in that we're required to demonstrate through hard data the need to spend those safety funds to do a particular project or particular type of project or particular safety improvement. And we have run into many instances across the state where on its face it may appear to be a safety issue that potentially could be eligible for use of some safety funds to make some improvements, but the lack of data prevents us from doing that. So I guess that I would say that's the biggest strength and probably the clearest weakness that I would identify right now.
Darren, is that a lack of data from the tribal police? Is that what you're saying?
That's part of it. That's been an issue we've been working on with the tribes for a number of years now in terms of being able to gather and maintain accident data that's needed to support some of those safety improvements.
Good. Any further questions of the committee? Representative Russell.
Representative Versio and I have been requested by the City of Edgemont to talk about lowering the speed limit on three intersections on Highway 18. And I don't know what process we need to initiate, but if you could get us that information, we'd sure like to have it. We also had, at least 400 people sign a petition to do so.
Sure.
So we can get that from you and get that started. I'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair, for the benefit of the committee, if anybody else has a similar situation, the easiest way to proceed with those is to contact our region office, which for Edgemont would be Rapid City. We have a traffic engineer in each of our region offices who would then come out and do the necessary studies and gather the data and look at the situation and make a recommendation, which ultimately gets forwarded. Then once that study is complete, gets forwarded to the peer and would be presented to the Transportation Commission, who has the authority to change those speed limits.
And Representative Russell, the Transportation Commission does meet once a month, and when you see the necessary data, probably traffic count, volumes, things like that.
Average speed, accident history, all those kind of things are gathered and examined according to national standards to determine what a recommendation might be.
Representative Russell, did you get all that? Yep. Great. Representative Ironcloud, and then we'll probably finish up.
Okay, thank you for these numerous comments, questions here. This is just a comment, and I don't really, you don't have to answer, but I just want you to make aware that I don't know if you're aware of on the Pine Ridge, but there's a village, a town called Allen, and there's a road between Allen and 18. And I know it's not a state road, but I sure would be happy to hear any suggestions or possibilities on how to deal with that road, because there's a jurisdictional situation. And I know that's important, but more importantly, I believe, is safety. There's already been a life lost because of that road just deteriorating, falling apart. and, you know, not to just to, you know, say that I would really like to hear some ideas from you on how to go about that, because I believe that anything inside South Dakota, regardless of, you know, the statutes and laws, they do have responsibility as much. I mean, just maybe just to give support or ideas, you know, to how to deal with this, because many of the community out there is needs help. So I just wanted to make that comment to you. Thank you.
Madam Chair, could I respond to that?
Absolutely.
Just briefly, just maybe for the benefit of the rest of the committee, because I am very familiar with the issue he's referring to. And Allen Road is actually a county road in Bennett County, if I'm correct. And it was a county road that was very heavily used and very heavily used by tribal members, and actually got a federal earmark to do some improvements to the road, although the federal earmark fell short of funding the entire cost of the things that needed to be done there. And so we've been involved only from the standpoint that those federal funds flow through us and trying to get something put together to make some improvements to the road. There was some discussion throughout that process, and is still ongoing, about the BIA possibly taking jurisdiction over the road, the tribe possibly taking jurisdiction over the road. I believe actually yesterday there was legislation introduced that at least partially addresses that issue, and it's being driven by the Allen Road issues primarily. There are still, as Representative Ironclad points out, there's still some other legal and jurisdictional issues that are hanging out there, but it certainly brought to light very clearly some of the problems and challenges that we have. It's a tough situation when you're sitting there with earmarked funds and you can't do anything, and yet you have a road that's, to say it's in poor condition would be an understatement, I think. It's in tough shape.
All right, committee, at this time I think I'll entertain a motion for adjournment. No more further questions? All right. Well, before we do adjourn, I do want to recognize our pages, though. I did forget. Brittany from Chamberlain and Whitney from Arlington, please stand up. I believe we have a motion for adjournment by Representative Kopp. Seconded by Representative Shipp. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Transportation adjourned.